for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 687 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. He's one of our favorites here at the podcast, so it's always great to talk with Ed Jowett with the Cascade miniseries that's now on Kickstarter. Ed catches us up with the very latest happenings with SOV Comics, including that current Kickstarter for Cascade 2. This crowdfunding project is described this way. The Empowered face a giant robot and an army. Penumbra, Violet, Lacuna, and Blue Shift are back. When the giant robot starts creating an army of smaller ones, what will they do? We explore this team-up, how these comics work with Shades of Vengeance's other projects, and what else is coming from them in the months ahead. This Kickstarter will conclude on Sunday, April 20 at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, so be sure to back this project once you have finished listening to our fun interview. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Ed has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Hi everyone, Ed here from SOV Comics. I've always loved superhero stories where powers don't fix everything. Where they might be facing a bad guy, but the real fight is about trust, fear, failure, and overcoming your flaws. That is what Cascade is about.
In Cascade 2, the Empowered face a giant robot and an army. Penumbra, Violet, Lacuna, and Blue Shift are back. When the giant robot starts creating an army of smaller ones, what will they do? And it's great to welcome back to the project, Ed Jowett from Shades of Vengeance and SOV Comics. How you doing, Ed?
Hi there, Wayne. It's an absolute pleasure to be back, especially with this project, because I think we spoke about Cascade Part 1 3.5 years ago.
Oh, wow.
It's been that long, and I'm very happy to talk about why, if you're interested in that. But yeah, it's absolutely brilliant to be back. Cascade number 2 and number 3 now somewhat underway. And Cascade 2 ready on Kickstarter, and yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see this story that I started ages ago finally come to fruition.
Wow, that's great. Now, people get mad at me because I don't say this soon enough. They said, this project will only be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, April 20 at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which is a different time in your neck of the woods.
Not 9 British daylight, British summertime, we call it over here. But yeah, no, that normal early afternoon end over in America that you often commented on. I like to know before I go to bed at night whether it's funded or not. Otherwise, mm-hmm. You can't sleep.
Right. Well, of course, if it happens, if sometime when you're sleeping, then something bad could happen and you won't know about it. So you never
know, do you?
Nope. Now, I've got to read a little bit of this. It's under story. It says, a world of superheroes, a mysterious artifact, an accident, and the next thing you know, a giant robot is sucking all the power out of every building in sight. And that's the basic story stuff. Art is gorgeous on this. Who's doing the art in this?
So that's Romad Wisnabruto. He's done several of our comics, including Blue Shift's comic and Lacuna's comic and Violet's comics and Penumbra's comics. Mm-hmm. So you've seen this artwork before, mm-hmm. from the various stuff that he's done and we've talked about. It's always a pleasure to work with Romad. He is absolutely, the stuff he does is stunning. I mean, this particular image, that's probably the one you're looking at, the giant robot when it first comes out from under the building. I adore this image. I had to include it. It's actually from Cascade Part 1, that particular image. Because that's what Cascade Part 1 was, and that's where we left it. So let me catch you up.
Okay.
we're in a world of superheroes, and you know, we've had a variety of superheroes, and please, listeners, if you want to know more, I've spoken to Wayne about nearly all of them. You can go look up Blue Shift, Frenemies, Blue Shift Mind Games, Violet Unstoppable. We've talked about Violet Backlash. We've talked about Lacuna, might have been before we met, but I'm not entirely sure. We did talk about Penumbra Tide.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about Cascade Number One. I'm 99% sure.
Okay.
And, you know, you always said you like the way that I write female, or I mean, I want to give proper, my good friend Jonathan Lewis, who spoke to you in, I think your first interview was with Jonathan.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy and Jennifer, who helped to write Lacuna and Violet, respectively. I think we write some really great heroes, and you've always been very kind about the way in which we bring these characters to life. So those stories, for the most part, before Penumbra Tide, which is the latest of the ones I've mentioned just then, before the Cascade series, they were all like establishing these heroes and getting to understand them a bit, you know, what they're like and what they can do and what they can't do and what they struggle with in their lives and so on. But this was always going to happen. This was my this is my first Avengers movie moment, where they all come together, you know, to fight this enormous threat. Now, Penumbra Tide was an apparently relatively innocent story about Penumbra, who is an empowered superhero thief. And she, by the end of the story, she steals this artifact. But she's made a friend in the meantime, who was a real estate agent who helped her buy an apartment during the heist. She needed it for reasons. Read Penumbra Tide, no spoilers. But this friend came to visit her for dinner after the heist was finally successful. And she touched this artifact unknowingly. It looks like, you know, it was just sat in the apple bowl, you know, the fruit bowl. And she touched it unknowingly and turned into this giant robot. And Penumbra, you know, feels a bit guilty. You know, Penumbra is probably, like, clinically a bit of a psychopath, like, generally doesn't really care what her actions do to other people.
Mm-hmm.
But she clearly feels bad about Teresa, this friend, and you know, intends to save her. So, you know, the first thing she does is try to physically stop her. To start with, she's a person-sized robot. But that culminates in her collapsing a building on top of Teresa and saying, yeah, I'm sorry about that, and walking away. But then this scene that you're looking at near the top of the Kickstarter happens, where you know, just the robot just rises out of this building. And yeah, maybe that was a mistake. From there, Cascade starts just sucking up all the power, like grabbing power cables and whatever, and just consuming all the power from the power grid. Sissy turns off and whatever. Penumbra goes to get help. She goes to Lacuna. It's actually Lacuna's hometown, which we see in the Lacuna comic is where she is. And she manages to persuade him by showing him the giant robot. And then the next thing you know, out of nowhere comes Violet, who's on holiday in this town by chance, and just smacks Cascade in the face, but Cascade turns energy into matter. So that just makes Cascade bigger. Then, you know, Blue Shift comes along and rescues them when they're about to be crushed by Cascade. So, you know, Penumbra figures, well, I'm the leader. You know, I brought everyone together. I'm going to do this. But Penumbra is a terrible leader. And that's where this comic and this comic series gets really interesting. My day job, we were just talking before we started talking just now. My day job is as a project manager in software delivery. So I deal with teams every day, and part of my job is to make sure that they work together, promoting each other's strengths rather than getting in each other's way and causing problems for each other and you know, preventing each other from being effective.
Mm-hmm.
And Penumbra is pretty sure that she can do everything better herself. Like, she's pretty sure she only needs the others as, like, a distraction or whatever. She's pretty sure she's the one who's going to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And this story, both part one and part two, are all about how a dysfunctional team can make things worse. No matter what you try to do, it's not planned. So you're just blundering around doing your own thing. The four of you all have a different plan about how you're going to deal with the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the person who likes people and thinks they should gather up any other empowered they can find to fight against the giant robot. You've got the person who thinks, right, well, brute force is going to do the job. Let's just do that. You've got the person who's watched the brute force fail and is going, come on, seriously? You've got the person who's going, right, but, you know, maybe we need to, you know, call in, or think about it and work out what it is to do. And you've got all these different approaches, and they're all convinced that they're right. And you've got no unifying voice that is trying to go, right, we need to work together here or we're not going to succeed, because all of them are so convinced that they can do it alone.
Hmm. Well, of course, this is their first time in a team, so...
Exactly, right? They've never even worked with... Each of them has never even worked with another empowered effectively before. So Lacuna encountered Penumbra, and Penumbra used him as a distraction, basically. Mm. He was supposed to be the distraction that lets her get away.
Mm-hmm.
He was used by her. And Blue Shift, she's worked with another empowered, but it was more like rescuing that empowered than it was. And Violet encountered another empowered, and it went horribly wrong in Violet Backlash. It went horribly wrong for her. She tried to be friends, and I guess you could say she was betrayed, really, fundamentally. So none of them have ever really had a good experience working with another empowered. So you look at that and you go, well, I can understand why they wouldn't be able to work together. But throughout Cascade 2, they keep trying things. And at the beginning of Cascade 2, we're done with just a giant robot here. Cascade walks off and walks into a lake. Just unexpectedly walks out of the city, walks into a lake. And it turns out that Penumbra follows her on her own. She's already split up with the others. Blue Shift has broken her leg. So she's not doing well running. Lacuna and Violet managed to get Blue Shift out of danger, but Penumbra just goes off after Cascade on her own, just disappears. That's what she does. That's what the character does in general. She has a tendency to disappear. And she finds Cascade finding this other device at the bottom of a lake. And when Cascade comes out, the National Guard have assembled. And they start shooting. Tanks, rocket launchers. They even call in some fighter planes to fire some missiles.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that, it doesn't make Cascade bigger anymore. It blows tiny little pieces off her that then grow into human-sized versions of Cascade.
Hmm.
So then the next thing they know, they've got an army coming at them. As well as the giant one, they've got an army. But this army isn't trying to, like, attack or fight. It encases people. Many of the National Guard are encased in these robots, and they just lie face down encased. Lacuna and Blue Shift and Violet come out of the building where they'd been taking cover and try and, you know, hold a line against this advancing tide. They have no chance. They are overwhelmed very quickly, just sheer numbers. And they are encased.
I was wondering what would happen if they were encased. What would happen?
So that's an interesting question, because what happens is, and Penumbra escapes. She is not encased. She escapes and she observes. And what happens is, if you are a person and non-empowered and you're encased by a robot, the robot will eventually get up and start walking around and sort of support the other robots, hold other people still so they can be absorbed by another robot, whatever. If you're an empowered, the robot explodes. Just, it can't contain you. And it gave me an opportunity to have a little cameo for Fauna, which is another character I believe we discussed before. He is encased briefly, and then the robot explodes. And Penumbra goes, ah, don't like the taste of empowered. Okay, interesting. That means that obviously Violet and Lacuna get released quite quickly. Blue Shift is inside the robot for a little longer. She's eventually released, but when she's released, she has a, I suppose you'd call it like a cast or a splint on her leg. And she can run now. Like, she's okay. She can run on that leg. Maybe not quite as fast, but perfectly fine.
So the robot.
What are these robots doing?
Yeah, I was going to say, why would the. I guess the robot would do that to help it keep functioning properly. Is that why put a splint on her leg?
It looks that way, but why keep an empowered functioning properly when the empowered are standing against them and trying to stop them? It's not answered in this issue. It is answered in number 3. Yeah, it's sort of. It's the Empire Strikes Back of this three issue saga, in the sense that everything goes wrong. Like, we're going to hit the low point here,
right,
where they lose. They are losing. The city is being taken over. It will not take long for these robots to spread across the entirety of the world. At the rate that they are going, it's weeks. They've proven they can just walk underwater. So they'll just run underwater, because Cascade did that, obviously, in the lake. They don't breathe. They can't be stopped. Anyone who gets close gets enveloped. And then, yeah, okay, empowered or let go. But no one knows why.
Wow. That's wild stuff. So you said the third issue is going to wrap this all up, right?
The third issue is going to wrap this all up and pave the way forward. I've written another, and in fact had the illustration done. I haven't done the lettering yet, for an issue that comes after this already, but it was a different art team, so it was sort of a bit easier, because I wasn't like overloading Ramad, or indeed the letterer, in order to get the stuff done. So I was able to do that sort of alongside this. So I've got another comic ready to go off of this, but it's sort of based on stuff that happens during. So I didn't want to sort of push it forward now, because it'd be like, oh, well, we've sort of gone in a straight line and then we jump forward and then we jump back again. You know, it didn't feel right. So, yeah, I made the decision to kind of hold off on publishing that until after Cascade number 2 and number 3 are done. At that point, it's ready. It's Fauna number 2. It's Fauna's second comic, and it's named Rampage. Which it's an exciting story. I'm really happy with the way it came out. As I am about Cascade number 2, actually. I mean, it's been 3.5 years, and it didn't need to take that long. Not really, but. There's a lot of advantage to taking your time, because you rethink things and you rewrite things and you shift the dialogue around a bit and you improve it and you expand it and you know what I mean? It's sort of like, we can do better than this. There's an opportunity here to go, I'm obviously a bit tired. There's an opportunity here to go one step further than we otherwise might have done. To push the boat out a bit, to take a risk, maybe. that if we'd just produced the story, like if we'd done this 3 months in a row and just done 1 month on each comic, we wouldn't have put the work in the same way as we have by taking our time over issues 2 and 3. So while it has been a long wait, and I do feel a little bit guilty about how long it's been, 3.5 years is a very long time to wait for a sort of continuation of the story. I think people will see the benefit from having waited.
Okay. I think. Well, you know, it's there's a good and bad to having a schedule. If you put out a comic every month, well, like, for example, right now, Absolute Batman's been going and doing great guns, but obviously something happened because, like, issue number 3 was a different artist.
Yeah.
And they extended the original storyline, which was supposed to be 5 issues, now became 6. And, you know, the thing of it is, on some levels, they did some background stuff that I was really happy to know about this version of Batman. So I, on some levels, I was glad it happened because it really made a huge difference as far as understanding what's going on. So I always say, you know, put comics out when they're ready, not on the schedule. Yeah. Because
I think if I was ever gonna, you know, if someone asked me to do 12 months of comics, right, I would have written it before that 12 months started. I would know exactly what it is I'm doing all the way along. If I had to, like, 12 months of monthly comics, you know.
Right.
I would have written it.
Well, that's the thing about comics is, but see, there are some people, yeah, it's the old Janet Jackson thing. What have you done for me lately? You know, we've got to get the, I didn't get a comic this month. So what, I got to turn my attention to something else. But if it's a good comic, I always tell the Dark Knight Returns story. The first issue was 4 issues, miniseries. The first issue came out. Second issue came out on time. The third issue came out 6 months later. The fourth issue came out a year after that. And I remember thinking, I'm never going to get to read the end of this story. I remember when it came out, I went home.
You came back for it when it happened.
Oh, yeah. I was sitting there reading issue 4 going, I can't believe I'm getting to read this. I didn't think I'd ever get to read it. But it was worth the wait. Now, of course, nobody understands any of that because it's all collected into one edition. So they don't get that.
It's one of those... it's a bit like, you know, a Netflix series where you can binge watch it now.
Yeah.
There's no... I mean, I sound like an absolute old fogey when I say this. Just one of the best things about, like, TV series was discussing with your friends in between what the episode last week was like. What you think is going to happen next. And... it's sort of the same with comics, isn't it? It's. I'd like to believe that there are people out there going, oh, I wonder what's going to happen next. It's this, or maybe. And like I say, 3.5 years. It's a long time to wait. I think this is going to live up to what people hope for.
Great.
I think people are going to be happy. At least I hope so. I mean, I've worked very hard to write a good story. And I figure that's where the core comes from, right? If it's a good story that I can say I'm proud of, that's what matters.
That's good. Well, I want to read something from the Kickstarter page. I think it's something that we may have talked a little bit about this before, but I think it bears some more discussion. It says, the thing that makes a good superhero isn't the powers, it's the person behind the powers. Because they're flawed, they get things wrong, and they make mistakes. And that's what Cascade is a story about. People who are learning to work together for the first time, and in this case, saving the world. 4 strong people who are used to working alone have to come together to face a threat like this. And that it reminded me back of the, when I tell you how old I am, I remember the early Justice League of Americas. And the only difference was their powers. They were, you know, they basically, everybody did the same thing except Batman had no powers. And he always teamed up with Wonder Woman because they were the closest as far as powers go. But they would always do that, and it didn't matter who the person is. And now it's funny when I read, like, Green Lantern, for example. They've turned Carol Ferris into a female Green Lantern of sorts.
Yeah.
So that relationship is now we're exploring that relationship for the first time, and I really like that. I like the fact that we get to see them as human beings and what they're doing and how they react to the different situations.
Because that's the thing. I mean, at the end of the day, the reason that you read a comic is one of two things. It's either mindless escapism, which, sorry, I want to be really clear, that is not a downer on mindless escapism. I love mindless escapism.
Mm-hmm.
Terminator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially Terminator 2. Mindless escapism. It's just a bit of fun, right? Mm-hmm. It's not it's not really trying to tell you. It is a little bit, I suppose, in the case of Terminator. But, I don't know, the A-Team or whatever. And then you might want to read a comic because you want a really good story. Mm-hmm. And if it's going to be a really good story, if it's going to be a story that speaks to you, it needs to be a person that you can understand, whether it's someone who reminds you of you or a friend or an acquaintance or whatever, you know, you're just like, oh yeah, I know this person.
Mm-hmm.
I know this person. I know what this person's like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you watch as they go into a situation that may be extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a 4-year-old son, and if there's one lesson that I'm teaching him, it's about never give up,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And fundamentally, what are superhero comics about apart from never give up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, that's what a superhero comic is fundamentally talking about, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's about never giving up, no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is why my son likes superheroes. You know, it's why he likes Sonic the Hedgehog or Flash, or he's a speedster. He's a speedster kind of guy. And it's because they never give up, mm-hmm. right? Things mm-hmm. go wrong, and then they try and do it again.
Right.
And they try a different way or whatever, but they never give up. And mm-hmm. that, to me, is what a superhero story is inherently all about. No matter how bad it gets, a superhero does not give up.
See, in the old days, I think pre-video game time, I think people didn't worry about that because we didn't understand, you know, because what happens now sometimes is when they get into that mode of we don't care who the person is, it's a video game. It's things are moving and things are happening and stuff, but honestly, I don't care because I don't know who these people are or care about them. But there's a lot of people, and I don't understand the lure of video games myself, but to me, there's a lot of people who want that, who want something that's going to make them for hours pull a trigger and stuff like that. I don't want that. I want to know and care about the person that is being involved. So that's different for
me. And I think that if you want to go play a computer, I mean, as you know very well, Wayne, I come from a role-playing game background.
Mm-hmm.
And so the argument of computer game versus do you really need a person and tables and, you know, a person to GM and tables and people and character sheets and dice and so on, do you really need those things?
Mm-hmm.
That debate's been going on for a long time. I've been aware of it since the late 90s.
Wow.
And the thing is, if you want to go play a computer game, that's totally fine. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But you need to understand that it's a different experience
mm-hmm.
to participating in a story. And now we've got AI. Me personally, I'm very anti-AI in creativity. Mm-hmm. I don't really have a problem with an app that lets people play D&D with the AI acting as a GM. I don't mm-hmm. really have a problem with that. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
As long as people sort of go, okay, I understand that is a different experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem with the existence of it. I have a little problem with how they probably trained it.
Mm-hmm.
Because most AI is trained on it on, you know, illegally obtained materials.
Mm-hmm.
But the fundamental idea of you can play a role-playing game, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, with an AI that's being your GM for you. I don't have any real issue with that. That seems to me like a good use of AI for someone who can't find a group or somebody who wants a different experience. I am a perma GM, but because I'm a pain in the ass as a player, no one would want to GM for me, no one in their right mind. So, you know, maybe for someone like me who does want to have the opportunity to play as if a player, but no one wants to GM for them. Yeah, fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hope that that would not be the case for anyone. I hope that everyone would get a chance to play if they want to. But yeah, I think that people see it as a choice of it's the same thing and I can do it this way or this way, and understand. I love computer games. I play lots of computer games. I really do. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of computer games. And it's a different experience, right? It's a different part of my brain that I'm using to when I sit down and read a comic. That's okay. There's nothing wrong with that at all. There's nothing wrong with different experiences. So try a computer game. Try one out. See if you like it. Try comics, see if you like those. There's no one right answer. You can like everything. You don't have to not like comics because you like computer games. And I think too often, and this is not new. It's been true for a long time. There was a Star Wars versus Star Trek thing many moons ago when I was at school. Right, you couldn't like both of them.
Right,
you had to like one or the other. It's just it's the way that people approach things. And yeah, I mean, I would always encourage try comics, try computer games, try novels, try my comics, try Robert Kirkman's comics, try Batman, try RoboCop, try Alien, try things. See what vibes with you, because there's no wrong answer. There's no limit to what you can like. I like all of the things I've just listed. And then sometimes I play a computer game and I go, that was terrible. Or I read an individual issue of Green Lantern and go, well, that wasn't the strongest ever, was it? You know, that could be better. That's okay too, right? It puts the better ones into perspective.
Well, I got a fuss about AI. The thing, AI was supposed to come along and was supposed to take over the mundane functions so we didn't have to do them anymore.
Yeah, instead, creativity feels like a mundane function, doesn't it? Sorry, that was sarcasm for anyone who calls Mike's question.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the AI now is doing all the creative stuff, so we're stuck doing the mundane stuff that we weren't supposed to do. So that bothers the heck out of me. Whenever somebody talks about AI, I'm going like, I don't use AI because I want to do all this whole thing myself, and I don't want AI to take over any of the stuff.
So, the thing about AI is it will never have new ideas. It only learns from what it's been shown. And it's basically a remix of all the ideas you've seen before. So if you're okay with AI, you're A-okay in a lot of cases, especially artwork. You're okay with stealing other people's work and remixing it into what you're using. Me, that I would say that's morally wrong, and you'll undoubtedly have noticed, Wayne, that at the bottom of my Kickstarter, I've got a little jokey image there about, you know, how we write stories about, you know, AI attacking the city. Do you really think we're going to use AI? But there are uses for AI. There are the right things to use AI for. You can use AI for enhancing Google search results effectively, right? I used it to give me a suggestion for stuffed chicken thigh fillets the other day, right? Nothing wrong with that. You know, I could go buy a recipe book, but I'm not sure I'd like it. And I just kind of want the basics because I'm not a great cook. And I just kind of want the basics, and I want to try something, and what's a good idea to put in a thing? Oh, let's try tomato. Okay, what else should I add to that? And it gave me some suggestions, and I chose some of them and didn't do others. And, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that's the right way to use AI. The mundane stuff, like you say.
Yeah.
And then you get AI artwork and people doing comics with AI art and going, well, it's cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My take on AI art is a little different to anyone else I've ever run into. Because I don't think about... So, again, role-playing game space. Forgive me for going back there. It's one of my safe spaces. One of the things that was the most common thing that a growing artist would do when I first started was they would draw your D&D character for you.
Mm.
But now people use AI to do that.
Mm.
So those artists never have that work. They aren't paid for it. They don't learn that there's a reward for doing it. Even if it's $10 for drawing a character, if that's what they want to charge, you know, I'm not... They never learn. Mm-hmm. They never improve. They never progress their skills.
Mm-hmm.
So they never reach the point where they could work for Magic the Gathering because they never got started.
Right.
There's no job for an entry-level artist anymore. So how does the art industry survive long-term if all of the entry-level jobs are done by AI?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, ultimately, that just means that AI does everything, surely.
Right, right. Because eventually AI will figure out how to do the mid-level that we're not using right now.
We're not quite there yet. It's still too uncanny valley, but it'll get there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then it'll do the top level stuff. And what we'll see is a remix of ideas that have been around forever. Mm-hmm. There'll be no originality. There'll be no thinking. There'll be no, I'm going to do it this way. It doesn't matter what everyone else has done. I'm going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm such a big believer in I'm going to do it this way
mm-hmm.
as the center of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It scares me.
Mm-hmm.
It scares me about what, in the long run, creativity is going to look like. not because I'm going to lose my job. I'm not. I mean, I run my own company and
mm-hmm.
I have a day job. You know, I'm not going to. I'm in fact, my day job is one of the safest day jobs as a project manager. It's going to be very hard to put me out of business because people want to talk to a person, right?
Yep.
So I'm not going to lose my job anytime soon, really. But I could stop ever meeting anyone creative.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a genuine tragedy.
The only time I used AI one time, I had an illustration I was using for a banner for my podcast. But it didn't fit the space. And the AI said to me, "Do you want me to fill the space?" I said, "Well, let's see what you do." And what it did was it drew the feet on the characters to fill the space. And I thought, that's interesting. It actually worked well enough for me to use it. That's the one and only time I've ever used AI. It was able to fill in what the boots and the feet would look like on each of the characters in the illustration. And I thought, I don't know if I wanted to do anything else besides that.
I mean, even that is a little questionable, isn't it? I mean,
mm-hmm.
I understand why you would do it, but think about the artist who didn't get the job, who didn't learn that skill.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, I mean, it's, and that's the thing, right? It's such a slippery slope. The use you're talking about, one mm-hmm. time, I don't have an mm-hmm. issue with, right? I'm not. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I want to be really clear for anyone listening. I'm not having a go at Wayne here, guys. But it's a slippery slope because you could start using it for everything very quickly.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you
yeah.
You can see, when you occasionally use it, you can see, I am getting dumber. I am not solving this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, cooking, I don't care because I don't see it as an outlet for me for creativity. It is for some people. For me, it's just a functional thing. I have to eat and I wanted to try something that maybe wasn't exactly the same as everything else I eat every day. That was the extent of my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I know, and I felt like I'm not... It told me exactly what kind of rice to buy, and it told me what tomatoes to buy, and it told me... I didn't think at all at any point during that process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's fine. Like, I don't... Again, I don't care. I don't want to be spending my brain power on cooking and the mundane thing.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine if everyone had every recipe come from AI and it told them exactly what to buy.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrifying. It's really scary.
Yeah.
I think. Anyway.
Yep. Well, I wouldn't... I'd be afraid of what it would taste like. I mean, it doesn't know what the taste is going to be like, basically. It's following what somebody else has done.
But it doesn't think... Right. Mm-hmm. What it does is it goes and it collates information from all of the recipes, you know, all of the everything it can find online, every recipe that it can find online where it can crawl.
Mm-hmm.
It takes all of that information and goes, right, well, the favorite thing to do is stuff it with cheese.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to do that. So the second favorite thing to do is stuff it with tomato. Okay, fine. Let me get the recipes for tomato. Fine. Here they are. And it puts it together and it says, here's what you do. You get a garlic clove, you get some lemon, you get whatever you're going to get. You stick all that inside the chicken fillet and you close it up. And it's not thinking that'll taste nice. It's thinking this is a collation of the information I have as I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why. So AI gets things badly, hilariously wrong something like 20% of the time at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But when it's doing coding, it gets things wrong 52% of the time, according to the latest data that I've seen.
Yikes.
It just gets it dead wrong. It solves the problem badly, or I am not very expert at doing Google Sheets coding.
Mm-hmm.
And work called for me to do it for some reason, and I'm not a developer anymore. I haven't been for years, and I didn't want to disturb anyone, so I just decided to have AI write it.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried, and on the third try, I completely gave up and said, "I'm gonna have to learn this myself because it is it would do a thing that was like 80% right, and then I'd go right, but this is wrong."
Mm-hmm.
And then it would regress some of the things that it had done and undo some of the good stuff in the new version of what it delivered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's terrible.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And after the third try, I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this anymore. This is a waste of my time.
Well, I feel bad. I see these. Sometimes it makes pictures with different elements you want it to make, you know, and it comes out and I look, that doesn't look real.
Yeah.
It looks fake. You know, you can tell the elements are there and you can kind of recognize the people, but it isn't real.
Yeah.
So I have a real problem with that. I like I said, that I had to be talked into being able to use that AI that one time because I couldn't figure out what to do if I didn't do that. So
I'd like to speak to writers who are listening, and yourself, of course, Wayne, as well. I recommend that you familiarize yourself with the way that AI writes. So use ChatGPT, have it write you a story, and read it, and understand what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because more and more, I work with a lot of writers. More and more people are submitting ChatGPT work as their own.
Mm-hmm.
They're very happy to do that. I was hiring for someone. So with 15 role-playing games, it's very hard for me to write campaigns for all of them.
Right.
I've got lots to do. I've got other books to create and so on. Mm-hmm. So I struggle to do all that. And I decided that what I would do for my fantasy game, which I want to have some campaigns for, is I would give someone else a chance to write some stuff in this world. I think that's a nice thing to do. It broadens the world and it makes it, you know, it brings in other perspectives on the world,
mm-hmm.
not just my own. So I like doing that. And three of the people who applied, I recognized ChatGPT's fingerprints on what they submitted as their example work. So if you, I think understanding AI, whether you're going to hire a writer or not, I think understanding AI, understanding what it looks like, is really important. It's helped me with Kickstarter comments. It's helped me with recently at work, I was hiring for a project manager. We're hiring another project manager at work. And someone sent a cover letter and a CV that was written by ChatGPT. And I sat there looking at it for 30 seconds and I thought, no, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't be that dumb. And I actually asked ChatGPT, do you reckon ChatGPT wrote this? Mm-hmm. Which was an interesting meta question. Mm-hmm. And it came out with, yeah, I think so. It's got these elements, some of which I noticed and some of which I haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Learn about AI. Understand what AI looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Because something like 70% of everything on the internet now is supposed to have been written by AI.
Yikes.
Or at least rewritten by AI.
Mm-hmm.
Understand what it looks like. Understand what you're saying you don't like and why. Because otherwise, you are going to wake up one day and AI will be all around you without you realizing it. Whether it's YouTube videos that you watch or, I don't know, TikTok or whatever, news articles that you read. Does BuzzFeed still exist? If they do, they probably use AI. I don't even know if it still exists. I'm not entirely sure. It's know what you're looking at. When you're going to say, I don't like AI, understand it. Like you did. You used it. You used it for a thing. Understand it. Because if you want to declare an enemy of AI, which I have, you know, I do not like AI and creativity at all. Know what it is that you're standing against. Otherwise, you'll wake up one day and it'll be so prevalent around you that you won't even have understood that it is.
Yikes. Well, before I let you go, let's, again, one last time, this Cascade 2 will be funded if it reaches its goal by Sunday, April 20 at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And how far is the issue done right now? Is it completed or will it be done soon?
I'm quibbling over some lettering details. I'll tell you what, actually, you know what? Some fun for your listeners. I am looking for some sound effects. And I'm very happy to have suggestions because I'm struggling with these two to get them right. So, you know when the T-1000 in Terminator 2, that's probably what was on my mind. You know when it reforms from, like, the pool of liquid metal?
Mm-hmm.
At any time it does that. How would you onomatopoeically portray that in a comic? That's a good one. Then, the other one is, I talked about how the robots envelop people. They kind of open up. What kind of onomatopoeia do you have for opening up the like the, you know, you're hollow inside, you're a robot and you open up to absorb someone? Those two I'm a bit stumped on. The letter is asking me what to do and I'm going, dunno yet. Let me think about it. Let me watch it a few times and see if I can work it out.
So if somebody has a suggestion, how do they get that to you?
That is a very good question. I'm reachable on publishing at shadesofvengeance.com. That's always a good place to reach me. You can reach us at shadesofvengeance.com, or if you're specifically interested in comics, sovcomics.com, which is a subsite of shadesofvengeance.com. Also a bit easier to type. We are on Facebook at Shades of Vengeance. We are on Twitter at shades_of_venge, because Twitter only allows one fewer characters than I need. We are at Instagram on SOV Comics. We are on TikTok at SOV Comics, and I'm not very good at TikTok, so, you know, take it with a pinch of salt. We're on Discord. You can find the Discord link on sovcomics.com. Down at the bottom, just scroll to the bottom, it's in the footer, as indeed all of the other links as well. So, you know, we're a nice friendly bunch on Discord. We've got a nice community. We like talking about the universes, and I answer a lot of questions about what's going on and what I'm trying to say with certain things. So yeah, if you have any questions or indeed any ideas for onomatopoeia, join us there. I'd love some help. Maybe I'll have solved it by the time Wayne's got this all sorted out and out to you guys. But you know, I'll still take a suggestion. You never know. You never know.
Could be good for something else. We can help with
well,
that.
And indeed, I may not have entirely decided, and I may like whatever you suggest more.
All right. One last thing. Cascade 3. Any idea when that's going to be available?
So the artwork is about half done at this point. Let's call it a quarter done. I've got the colorist working on some of the inked pages. And some more pencils and inks coming in. I don't think it'll be... I mean, I think autumn should be possible.
And you'll do a Kickstarter for it then?
I imagine so, yes. Yeah. Okay. Hopefully you'll have me back.
Yes, well, we'll talk about that the next time. Is there anything else in the Shades of Vengeance universe that we should know about?
Oh goodness! Too much to tell. My goodness, we've got the 8th anniversary of Era Survival. Mm-hmm. We're doing a special edition of our role playing game rulebook. So if you're a role player, definitely worth checking that out. It's not on Kickstarter yet, but we're heading in that direction. We've got what's coming up. We've got a comic called Demon Sword that's based in the Era Forbidden universe. That's kind of a completely different kind of project. It's kind of a more anime project. I'm learning to let go a bit more, and I'm quite meticulous in my attention to detail, but I'm letting the artist make more decisions than I normally might. I just want to try that with an artist, and Thin is wonderful. The artist who's working with me on that. It's about a human-ish hero known as a forbidden, after picking up a demonic artifact, they sort of mutate it to become bigger and stronger. And this the remains of the demon that used to wield the sword that she now carries are in her head trying to get her killed. What else are we doing? We've done some audio dramas recently. I think I'm going to have a few more audio dramas coming soon. The Bug War number 3, a comic that you and I spoke about once upon a time, some time ago now, Wayne. We did an audio drama for it, and that audio drama is completed and I think is coming soon.
Great.
I've got a lot of stuff waiting in the wings at the moment. And, you know, with the economy the way it is, it's really hard to go out and ask people for money. Even though I feel like, you know, what I'm doing is very good quality entertainment, I feel like a lot of people are struggling at the moment on both sides of the pond. And it's a hard ask at the moment, I think. But, you know, if you think that I should be bringing some of these things to life, listeners... you know, hop on Discord or email and say, hey, you know, that comic Demon Sword sounded brilliant. I'd love to know more about that. Or I love audio dramas. What have you got planned? What are you planning to do? And you know, I'd love to get involved in that. So yeah, reach out, talk to us. You know, we don't bite much. I'd like to think we're a friendly bunch.
Well, it sounds great. And of course, I always appreciate your writing because it goes places that I haven't seen people go before. And I always enjoy going someplace I haven't seen previously. And again, it's Cascade 2, The Empowered Face, a Giant Robot in an Army. Be sure to get in there before Sunday, April 20 at 4 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, because we're going to make sure that Cascade 3 comes our way. So we need all that good stuff. So, Ed, it's always a pleasure to talk with you, and I look forward to doing this again sometime in the near future.
I hope so.
I'm sure of that. We'll do that.
Thank you so much for your time and for having me back, Wayne. It's always a pleasure. Always.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support.
For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.